Hi, everybody. It's a great pleasure to be there, and let me first thank the organizer for this nice invitation to this very interesting conference. So I remember with also great pleasure having talked to this, what would become this subject in Nottingham and Beijing, and since then I will try to show you how this matured into a more precise proposal. So it all started with kind of general conceptual ideas that since quantum gravity has no link yet with experiments, there are no established facts, then what we are looking for, still perhaps for a long time to come, is coherent mathematical formalism, which has to do in some way with performing this kind of functional integral. We like to sort of randomize a metric structure on possible space-time, which is this letter S. So we don't know very well how to perform this, what is the measure DG, on which underlying space-time, and should we sum over topologies also, how to put sources, what are exactly the observables, and even more difficult, how to connect a decent theory of this sum to our everyday space-time and our confirmed general relativity. Okay, so we should not lose from sight that perhaps the main mathematical difficulty that makes quantum gravity until now very much a subject of debate is that perturbative expansion around flat four-dimensional space-time of this GMU metric doesn't lead to a renormalizable field theory. Okay, so what is exactly the tensor track? So the tensor track is an initial approach to quantum gravity. It could be best described either as an extension, if you like, of random matrices and non-commutative quantum field theory, or as trying to complete and supplement group field theory on one side or dynamical triangulations on the other side with a new principle or tool which has to do with tensorial invariance and which could be thought of as a replacement from the point of view of a renormalization group of ordinary locality. So I will best perhaps say that it is a new approach which has neighbors, as you saw, and we are going to discuss a bit the relationship with the neighboring environment. So I will not describe the history of those approaches. I will just briefly recall some of the aspects which led to the current theory, but this is a completely arbitrary choice. So in GFT, I would single out that this is an approach which was somehow born by Bulatov's work in 1992, and it was revived by the realization that the Feynman amplitudes of this quantum field theory, which is non-local and on an abstract Lie group, this has to do with the spin forms, which are the covariant version of loop quantum gravity. So then on, there was a development of GFT techniques in connection with the development of loop quantum gravity, and that's what probably will interest most people in this room. On the other hand, the random matrix theory has even a much longer history. It goes back to the works of Wigner, Dyson, and so on, and it merged with quantum field theory by the observation in 1974 by Toff that it had a 1/n expansion which was led by planar graphs. And around 1980-something, it was, I would say, firmly connected to the problem of quantizing 2D gravity, especially by people like David Kazakov and many others. Then dynamical triangulation started a bit around the idea of generalizing these works to higher dimensions and using tensors. So this is some kind of early tensor period in this approach. But then it evolved into dynamical triangulation and causal dynamical triangulation in the last decade, and you will hear more about this in plenary talks and parallel session in this conference. So non-commutative quantum field theory is not so much represented in this conference, but I would like to mention that it is an old proposal also. The interest in it was revived when string theory realized that this is an effective sector of string theory somehow. And an important milestone for me was a construction of the first renormalizable non-commutative quantum field theory in 2004 by Grosse and Vulkenaar. The ordinary, simpler non-commutative quantum field theory, which had believed before to be renormalizable, were not because of the problem called ultraviolet infrared mixing. And this is the first renormalizable non-commutative quantum field theory, in fact, in four dimensions. And it was then connected later to, shortly after, with the phenomenon of asymptotic safety. So this is an asymptotically safe theory that doesn't require, for having a beta equals zero, any supersymmetry. So these are perhaps the neighbors that led to our theory. And what are the paths which could connect or led you to visit us? Where, if you come from LQG, you would start with spin networks. Then you would find a covariant version, which is spin forms. Then if you want to connect all these spin forms into a field theory in order to have precise prescriptions for the combinatorial weights on these spin forms and which one you want to sum, you would evolve into GFT. And then the route which would lead you to the tensor track is if you have the desire to renormalize this GFT, then you could come to visit us. Then from string theory, I would say there is a connection, which is a bit indirect one. Of course, string theory is an enormous word in itself. But string theory is connected to the random matrix theory. First of all, because of 2D quantum gravity and the question of conformal theories, but also because at some point, string theory was in search for a second quantized formalism, which was suggested to be M theory, and this was connected to a matrix model. So if one wants to enlarge this theory into higher dimension, one is rather led to this formalism. Yeah, if one comes from dynamical triangulation or causal dynamical triangulation, the path to us would be by adding, as you will see, a color condition on the dynamical triangulation, and that would be connected again with Feynman graphs of random tensors. And if you come from non-commutative quantum field theory, the path would be, if you would like to interpret this theory more as theories of formation of space-time and having to do with 3D or 4D gravity, then you would extend this theory into tensorial field theories, which are not really non-commutative quantum field theories. So that's it. And no matter for which route, you are very welcome to visit us. So who are we exactly? So what is our idea? So for the moment, this is a tentative name, tensor track. So nicknamed random tensors, tensor group field theory, or perhaps like M theory, T theory. That's a bit of a joke. So year of birth, I would put it at around 2011. So I would say we are no longer really a baby, but you know we would be rather what I would call a toddler. So what is a toddler behavior? So a toddler is some very active person, you know, that goes around for the first time walking in the parents' house, and he looks at every object, and he first tries to bang it, and sometimes he breaks it, and then he puts it back on the shelf, and that's exactly the typical behavior we are having at the moment. So when we will be a bit more grown up, we will settle in more precise programs. But at the moment, we are very much in the exploration phase. So our citizenship, well, if you use a soil citizenship, it would be probably considered Canadian and perhaps French and German. And if you look at the people, I would say it's something like French, Italian, Romanian, and Senegalese, perhaps. So our motto is tensor track could lead you to tenure track. Then the people. I have put a list of people, and I have put in blue the people who are really very actively involved in the program, and in black the people who have contributed or made some or shown some interest for it. So this is about now 20 people. The papers, well, we have about 80 papers on the subject, and there are no. We have a lack of a good review paper because this review paper is already a bit old for the new development. There are very short papers here without equations. And I will try to tell you what I would see a selection of, for the moment, what we consider our main results. So first of all, there was the starting point was the construction that by Razanguro of colored group field theories and the discovery that they admit a 1 over n expansion which is different from the vector or the matrix 1 over n expansion known to physicists. And the discovery that this is kind of universal theory in a precise mathematical sense for random tensors. Then there was the study of a single scaling of this theory, which is a bit the analog of what David or Kazakov did for matrices in 85. Then we found the first renormalizable tensor field theory in 2011, and then we were confident this 1 over n expansion had some interest. It could be used to balance in a new way power counting, and this is a bit analog for tensor models of what the Gross-Vulkenaar model is for matrix models. Then this theory was really quite unexpected. It has a phi-6 interaction, and it was discovered shortly after it is asymptotically free, in contrast with the Gross-Vulkenaar model, which is asymptotically safe. So this is also, I think, very unexpected thing. Then we generalized it to include what I call LQG data, for short, but I will try to say a bit more what I, how I see this world, what I mean by this world. Then in this year, I will single out three recent results. Well, first of all, by Guru and Ryan, that this single scaling limit was understood much better, in much more mathematical detail, as really having the Hausdorff and spectral dimension of branch polymers and being, in a certain precise mathematical sense, a theory of branch polymers. Then we had a foray into non-perturbative analysis. And then a very recent result is that we know how to do a double scaling limit now in this tensor model, so to go beyond this single scaling. And it is very, very different from what happens in double scaling of matrix models. So before I go further, I would like to say a large source of inspiration for us and hope is that this will lead somewhere is the lessons drawn from the same approach for 2D quantum gravity. So in 2D quantum gravity, I would say, before 2D quantum gravity, let me make a remark that from the mathematician's point of view, the simplest random space is probably the continuous random tree. It is well understood now in mathematical terms since the work of Aldous and followers, the probabilists in the 1990s, who understood in which precise sense you could build this object. And it corresponds to some graphs which have a plane tree structure. But 2D random geometry is not this. 2D random geometry is better described at first order through the careful counting of large 2D triangulations, you know, which are the Feynman graphs of matrix theories. And if you do that, you get a continuum limit. But there is another approach, which is to look at the continuum Liouville theory on the Riemannian surface, and everything indicates, although there are still some mathematical holes to fill in some precise sense, but everything indicates that these two pictures are equivalent descriptions of pure 2D quantum gravity. And a very important tool to better understand what is this is to understand the planar graph as described by trees or branch polymers, but equipped with fluctuation fields called the Schaeffer labels. And these fields generate space-time shortcuts between the leaves of the tree, which allow you to jump faster from a tree leaf to another faster than by following the tree distance. And that's why what makes this random space very different from that random space. All right? And there exists a double scaling limit, which aims at resumming of all genera. And this approach is blocked, cannot go higher in dimension by this mysterious C equals one barrier. But this approach has led to a certain picture which has a physical interest, which is that there are relations called the KPZ relations, which tell you that matter, critical matter, or random sets, you know, fractal sets, behave differently if you put them on a fixed geometry or if you put them on a random geometry. And there is a relation, quadratic relation like that, which tells you that the dimensions in fixed geometry and random geometry are not the same. Gravity, the effect of gravity in this way is detectable by this difference. Okay, so that is the lessons we take from 2D gravity and things we would like to mimic in higher dimensional gravity. So our visiting card is, well, a building block for our program is this idea of tensorial invariance. So this tensorial invariance is just very simple. It's just the idea of how to correctly generalize to higher to tensors, that is to arrays, higher dimensional arrays of numbers, the ordinary vector models for vectors invariance or matrix invariance. So, okay, so let's consider a Hilbert space because we need a scalar product. So let's consider a Hilbert space of infinite dimension. It's all about how are you going to split it as finite dimensional Hilbert spaces and try to have a cutoff of the number of degrees of freedom and explore the limit of large numbers of degrees of freedom. Well, the tensor idea is if there is a tensor structure somewhere, well, you will approach H as a tensor product of H n1 and d, and you would like to perform this limit. Okay. Well, the postulate of tensor invariance is that the interactions for this theory should be invariant under independent changes of orthonormal basis in each of these vector spaces. So it will be a un to the power, a un1 tensor un2 tensor und, exterior, if you like, tensor product invariance on the un group. So I would tend to think to this as a kind of pregeometric principle that interactions should not depend on the basis in which they are written. For the moment on, I will specialize to symmetric case. So how to explain it in a bit more precise mathematical terms. So this is the only slide in my talk where there will be some equation or some. It will be just an overview, very non-technical. But at this point, I would like to tell you why there is a connection between this principle of tensorial invariance and the occurrence in the theory of edge-colored Feynman graphs. Well, this is very simple. Suppose that you have a rank D tensor and its complex conjugate T bar, and you would like to understand which are the polynomials in the coefficients of T and T bar, which are invariant under these independent changes of basis. So it means when you rotate T through a U1 up to UD unitary matrix, and you anti-rotate T bar through the complex conjugate, you would like your polynomial in the coefficient of T to be invariant. Now, this is a problem solved since almost a century or so. In the theory of classical invariance, you know how to classify these things, and they are classified by bipartite edge-colored graphs. Okay, so a generalized trace, if you like, is precisely one of these polynomial invariant. If it's connected, it will be represented by, if you cannot factorize it in smaller invariants, it will be represented by a connected D edge-colored graph. So here I have given an example. I took a rank free tensor, so a tensor with free indices, and I'm trying to tell you, okay, let's look at this object, which has free T bars, and an invariant will be a collection of delta functions that will identify some elements of T with some elements of T bar by respecting the position. That is the only thing that I can have if I ask for this independent invariance. So why is it represented? Yes. No, for the moment, it is purely combinatorics. There is no GFT at the moment, no spins, nothing, just combinatorics. Okay? So let me write white vertices for T and black vertices for T bar and tell you what is this invariant. Why is it going to be a colored graph? Okay? So an edge will be given by one of these delta functions. So for instance, this delta A1 and P1 will identify this point here, this A1 with this P1 point, and I will put it in red because red will be the color which tells me that I am at the first position in the tensor. Then I will look at A2, A3, and they will be identified with other ones. You see that because this has been already taken, I can only go to other tensors with the 2 and 3 colors. And because my tensor had three lines, you see that three edges come out of it with different colors. And then I complete. And in that case, this will give me this graph. So this graph has a property that, you know, it is bipartite and edge-colored. So the main new richness which occurs in these Feynman graphs compared to matrix theory, that in matrix theory, invariants are only traces. So that at a given order, you have a single, essentially, a single connected interaction which is possible, which is trace of mm bar, mm bar, mm bar. But this is no longer true for tensors. For tensors, for instance, at order 6, that is 3t and 3t bar, you have, for instance, these four colored graphs. So you have, if you like, four different ways to take the analog of a trace in the tensor space. And this is what gives rise to a richer structure of Feynman graphs and to a very different 1 over n expansion. OK, so now let me go to the subject of tensor models versus tensor field theories. So to introduce you a bit to what are we really interested most in this approach is we would like to know whether our approach is more like a generalization of dynamical triangulation or more like a generalization of non-commutative field theory or more like a generalization of group field theory. And it is a bit of everything, but not exactly a single one. So I told you that I would like to see this tensorial invariance as a kind of extended version of locality to guide us into, you know, we discussed a lot about discretization of gravity and what non-locality should enter around the Planck scale. So this is our proposal. We propose that, so let us reason by analogy. In an ordinary quantum field theory, when you do a Feynman graph expansion, you have a propagator and a vertices and interactions, and they don't play the same role. The propagator propagates, so it is not local. It is based on an operator like the Laplacian or Dirac operator, but the vertices are local. That's essentially the characteristics of ordinary quantum field theory. So we propose that tensor invariance should replace ordinary locality in the kind of quantum gravity world that we propose. And then it means that interactions should have this invariance, but propagators should not. Propagator could break softly this invariance. So that would lead to tensor field theories. I would call tensor models, like random matrix models, models which are fully invariant, including their propagator, including the quadratic form. And if the tensor invariance is softly broken by the propagator, then I would call them tensor field theories. So it means that the relationship between tensor models and tensor field theories would be the same, a higher dimensional generalization of the relationship between matrix models and non-commutative field theories. For those of you who don't know it well, the Gross-Vulkenaar model is exactly that. That is, it has a matrix model interaction, like trace of phi 4, but it has not a matrix model propagator. Okay? That's no problem. So the soft breaking of locality will have a crucial consequence. It will launch a renormalization group flow. The renormalization group flow is generated by the tension between locality of interactions and non-locality of the propagator, which allows you to define scales. So let me talk now a little bit about renormalization. So first of all, this is a joke. So nobody, of course, believes anymore that renormalization is about pushing infinities under the rug. I would take this opportunity to say that the person, to pay tribute to the person who really allowed us to finally understood this was not the case, which is Wilson. So Ken Wilson is not usually associated with work on quantum gravity, but I think his influence on the subject will be more and more growing as we saw through many talks, you know, about the asymptotic safeness approach, the approach by refining of Bianca Dietrich and collaborators. We heard a lot about renormalization in this conference, and I think it will be more and more like that. If I would like to try to summarize for me, what I took as a message of Ken Wilson was that the law of physics and their appearance, the appearance of matter, appearance means phase, you know, or phase means appearance, this changes with the observation scale, and this change can be understood through the renormalization group. So He also was perhaps a person who led us to see the fact that ordinary interactions are renormalizable no longer as a beautiful, you know, thing to wonder, a mystery, a magic thing to wonder about, but a natural thing. You know, renormalizable interactions are those which just survive a long renormalization group flow. So they are the survivors. So it's no surprise if all standard model interactions, not including gravity, of course, are just renormalizable. So how to sort of try to extend the Wilsonian picture if there is a kind of transplanckian physics and if it is governed by the renormalization group? Well, we should have to power the renormalization group or to create a good renormalization group flow, we would need an almost local action, for instance, where locality is softly broken at the propagator level, a scale decomposition, and a power counting that balances Feynman graphs so we can know which are the marginal, the relevant, and the irrelevant interactions. So a single renormalization group step then integrates over the fluctuation, which are called the ultraviolet fields, at a given scale, and then it computes the logarithm of the result, which gives the effective action for the infrared background degrees of freedom. And this process is then iterated many times. Okay, so it's sure that quantum gravity is not exactly general relativity. There is a process in trying to understand how quantum gravity could give rise to general relativity. In my opinion, I would hope that the best tool we have to try to understand this process would be Wilsonian renormalization group. And, but the question is, should it be extended and in which way? So you know there are conservative proposals like the asymptotic safeness program, which tries to extend it minimally. Yeah, we are trying a bit bolder jump into trying to extend it in a certain way which respects these three things, but which modifies it a bit. Okay, so the tensor tracker could view it as a precise proposal for such an extension. Well, locality would be replaced by tensorial invariance. Scale would be the kind of abstract parameter n that appears naturally in a tensor model or in a tensor field theory. And power counting would be provided by the 1 over n expansion. So this is essentially our program. So then let me, because this is a loop quantum gravity conference, certainly you are interested into the, interested into the relationship of this program to loop quantum gravity. And that goes around the idea of, should we decorate our tensors or not with LQG data? So for short, I would say, well, it's more complicated than that, but let me call LQG data typically the data of group holonomies around faces that appear in the spin foam amplitudes or in the GFT models. So there are such holonomies, and there are constraints, for instance, by conditions that holonomies around faces are trivial or that they obey simplicity constraints. So let's call this, for short, LQG data. So the fact that triangulations, the Feynman graphs, the colored Feynman graphs of tensor models or tensor field theories can be interpreted as geometric triangulation because you can use the colors to glue faces of simplices. It means that our Feynman graphs are triangulation. They have a canonical associated metric exactly like the triangulations of dynamical triangulation. What is this canonical associated metric? The graph distance. Therefore, tensor models by themselves, they do not need, they do not require LQG data to provide a tentative route towards summing both over manifolds, space-times, if you like, and their metric. Okay, they have already a metric. They provide by themselves alone a measure on random metric spaces. Now, they could also incorporate additional data, such as LQG data, in their propagator, for instance. And this is what is done in what we have called, with Daniele Oriti, tensorial group field theories. Okay, so I would not like to hide here that we have internal debates, and we would like to see whether this is useful, this is necessary, this is, okay. So are these data fundamental for making sense and connection from this to general relativity? Do they enter at a later stage? Can we dispense of them altogether? This is not clear to us, and we explore actively all possibilities. So let me summarize by very simple drawings what could happen. Well, one thing could be that you could start with a tensor model and a tensor world. You know, you would analyze the, multiple scalings there. And someday along the route, by some complicated route, you would show that general relativity is an effective theory. So this possibility would be then the tensor track would be closer to the dynamical triangulations program. And this possibility is advocated both at the level of models or at the level of field theories. For instance, is more actively searched or pursued by Razvan and Joseph. Then you could start with tensor group field theory. So you have not only tensorial invariant vertices, but you have the LQG data, and you could connect to general relativity. And for instance, this is a route that is actively explored by Daniele Oriti and Sylvain Carosa. And so for myself, I would say I am more like a kind of a consensual and ecumenical person. So I would like, for instance, if perhaps tensors would lead us there and then would lead us there, that would be, everybody would be very happy, perhaps. So I would prefer that, but it is totally possible that none of this is true and that tensors will never lead you to general relativity. And if that is the case, then we have to abandon the idea, and I would find this very depressing. So I would not, but certainly logically possible. Okay, so then now, to conclude, let me go to the strong results, the solid mathematical results, which we have and that we'd like to emphasize here. I told you about this renormalizable model, so let me briefly sketch what has been obtained, but in a little bit more detail. So this first kind of renormalizable model was not expected, but it has a phi-6 type of interaction. And I think it is the simplest tensor field theory in dimension 4 that you can build. It has just a Laplacian propagator, and this Laplacian Beltrami operator is quite natural from the point of view of scale analysis. If you don't put it, you will get it sort of through radiative corrections associated to your cutoff breaking process anyway. So why not to put it? So then we have this theorem of renormalizability to all orders, and it is including arbitrarily large, if you like, spin forms or graphs of which correspond to arbitrary topologies. Put it spin form here, but you could put there also a dynamical triangulations, if you like. Okay? So, and the fact that the model was asymptotically free, you could feel perhaps this is just an accident, but it is rather a robust property. There are now several models, and we understand that this is a generic feature that typically matrix models, in their at their invariant point, they have a zero beta function, but tensor models, they are asymptotically free because the wave function renormalization is so much bigger than in matrix model. And I would like to stress that I think this asymptotic freedom would be a very desirable physical property for gravity. So this is interesting. First of all, recall that all standard model interactions, if you consider QED to be unified with electroweak interactions, essentially up to details, all standard model interactions except gravity were described by asymptotically free theory up to now. So it would be nice to have this, and it would lead naturally to the idea, just like asymptotically free theory have typically confinement in the infrared, hence space-time could appear as a kind of bound state of the tensor degrees of freedom. Okay? Then let me review also the other results that we have about the tensorial group field theories, that is, if you add LQG data. Then it has been shown, for instance, our most recent, probably best result in this area is that we have a version of the Bulatov model with SU2 group in three dimensions. Again, the marginal interactions are phi-6 type, which has been proved renormalizable to all orders. It means that, and it is also presumably asymptotically free, although this is still work in preparation. But what it means that the tensorial locality is compatible with Laplace-Beltrami propagators and BF projectors, so loop quantum gravity data. And this is, again, for arbitrarily large graphs and arbitrary topologies, the divergent graph being a particular class of graphs, we can prove that they resist to this, to all orders. So what we don't know yet, and this is an open question, very open and interesting point is, can we do this? We have this Laplace-Beltrami propagator, we have BF projectors. Can we add simplicity constraints such as those that occur in the Barrett-Crane or in the EPRLFK models? Because these ones are interesting for LQGs. So will they resist the renormalization analysis of tensor model is an open question for the next future. Okay, so let me stress, however, the common points in both approaches. When you renormalize tensor model in this way, the renormalization group flows from large N or large spins J, which are called the ultraviolet in the Wilsonian picture, towards smaller Ns and smaller spins, which Wilson then would force us to call us the infrared. So this is a point that has to be stressed. And you could still get large classical lengths or areas, in particular from patching many simplices. That is, if you have a confinement phase, you have a non-perturbative phase in which a number of Feynman graphs have proliferated. So in tensor model, you should really imagine the graphs with few simplices as a kind of expansion around no space at all, and the space-time as arising from a condensate which has infinitely many, many vertices, exactly like in the picture of a continuous random tree or a two-dimensional quantum gravity picture as a limit of triangulation. And let me say also that our model naturally provides a prescription for summing over space-time with various topologies. But this is not terrifying, because the tensor quantum field theory point of view just tells you that summing over these different topologies is not describing all topologies, for instance, of in four dimensions, including all C-infinity structures and so on, and trying to sum them abstractly. No, it gives you just the idea that summing over topology would be summing over graphs of, you know, and it is known that summing over graphs is divergent, typically, and have to be done through Borel summation and so on. So it is not easy, but it is not more difficult than summing over general graphs in ordinary quantum field theory, which is what people do since 50 years. And it is possible to include this sum over different topologies in other approaches, but actually it is not really the focal point of interest. It is not typically included in other approaches. Okay, so then let me say this was results, but now let me be very conjectural and say, what are the suggestions that our approach proposes? What are the concepts that it tries to put forward? And this is, of course, there is here absolutely no mathematical proof. It's just some suggestion. So what we suggest is that if you want to quantize gravity, well, this approach doesn't see the need for supersymmetry. For instance, counting triangulations in higher dimensions is difficult, but there is certainly a finite number for a finite number of tetrahedra, and we just don't know a closed expression for this, but it exists without adding supersymmetry, certainly. We don't see the need for Kaluza-Klein dimensions, although, of course, in later stages, this approach could look at holographic ideas, dimensional reduction. All this is potentially there, but to start with, there is no need. As I said, it's based more like on a Wilsonian program for, you know, for summing these graphs and getting into condensed phases, which you could interpret as classical space-time, and therefore it has no ultraviolet cutoff at the Planck scale, and it has no background. You know. That I think is clear. So in fact, the idea that space-time is an effective concept has a long history, and many people have advocated it. But I would like to say, we sometimes use this word geometrogenesis for the concept. It was introduced by these people. And I would like to say that this point of view in the loop quantum gravity context has been very strongly advocated by Daniele Oriti and collaborators. So in that way, we have this tensor theory that sort of condenses into our space-time. On the cosmological front, it is much too early to say things, but let's say it doesn't suggest that the universe necessarily bounds. or bound or whatever at the big bound, because the main argument for the bounds is this. If you interpret the theory as having an ultraviolet cutoff at Planck scale, you will have this picture of the universe at the big bang necessarily bouncing back. But if you have no ultraviolet cutoff, no reason for the universe to bounce. And the concept we would like to propose is that the big bang is like a condensation. It is a phase transition from a perturbative phase, which is around, if you like, no space-time at all, into a condensed phase which can be used to describe space-time. And I would like to say a little bit more, which is in this route, the first space-time we seem to encounter is the branch polymer kind. But we are not discouraged by this because it may not be the ultimate arrival point. It may just be a point on the route. Okay, so and later on, an ambitious goal in this approach would be to predict how random geometry could leave an imprint on classical space-time, a bit the kind of, well, our dream is, for instance, a kind of higher dimensional version of KPZ. Okay, so this were the message. Thanks to tensor invariance, renormalizable, asymptotically free tensor, quantum field theories do exist in dimensions 3 or 4. Possibly they could have general relativity as their effective limit, but this requires, of course, a lot of analysis. And in any case, this analysis is going to be built on this structure of the tensor 1 over n expansion, which is richer than, in fact, the matrix 1 over n expansion. And therefore, there will be an exploration program, I think, for many years to come on this idea. I had, if you are frustrated that there are no equations in this talk, equations should follow soon in the next talk by Rasmus Guru. And if you want also to hear more on this in the tensor session, these are the related in the parallel session, these are talks in the parallel session related to this. Thank you. Thank you.
Vincent, I do understand that you're presenting yourself as a toddler and this serious
yes.
toddler.
And you are grown up, Carlo.
Yes, and often physics is great physics done neither by grown up, it's done by people in their 20s or 30s, but rarely by toddlers, I think.
Yeah.
It seems to me, I'm confused about this, because there's some beautiful results. I mean, Razvan is beautiful results. But the idea of presenting this as a new approach, new program for quantum gravity, it seems to me there's a lot of wishful thinking. There's a lot of, could be this, could be that, but I don't see anything concrete. You emphasize 2 points, tensor invariance as a principle. Mm-hmm. Why? Just follow from the blue sky, it has no... And then you say, can I finish?
Yes.
And then the only thing you, in fact, I see is that you have some renormalizable model. And that's, at mm-hmm. first sight, it seems a great result. Oh, it's a renormalizable model. But it's very easy to write renormalizable models. You just, Stelle has a renormalizable theory of gravity. 10 years ago, Alejandro Perez proved that a certain spin form theory is finite, order mm-hmm. by order. You just take the propagator, you put a sufficient power, and you get everything finite and normalizable. It's just simply by power counting. The problem, of course, is to have models which are physical, have to do with generativity, and seems very far from it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, on a more positive note, sorry. Oh, you're right.
No. I have not much to answer. I was not... like a question, is more like a comment. I would just answer through this picture, you know. In fact, we've tried to find our room in these other communities, but it's clear that what we are doing is not compatible with the main tenets or tendencies of these other approaches. So that's why we have to consider it independent. You know, it is really very different from loop quantum gravity in so many aspects, in the interpretation of the degrees of freedom being ultraviolet and infrared, the need for renormalization, existence of ultraviolet cutoff, and that reacts on some of the main suggestions of the theories, you know, bounds or not, and so on. So we are open, of course, to contacts, but we are not really a branch of it. Same with random matrices. You know, as soon as the 1 over n tensor expansion is completely different from the one in random matrices, you cannot say that this is random matrices. With dynamical triangulations, we have to see, you know, but we are clearly on the quantum field theory proposal, so, and renormalization. So that's why we have to consider it, all root orders, we are independent approach.
Okay.
Yes.
Got a positive note from my side. Thanks for a very nice talk. I think it's very non-trivial that you have found some generalizations of matrix models and that you have asymptotic freedom, that this happens in 4D. These are non-trivial things. And in the spirit of Ken Wilson, I wanted to ask you about the suggestion about the sort of gravitational version of confinement.
Yes.
Okay, so in the usual case, let's say for QCD, Wilson gave us these nice observables and diagnostics, like area loop. Do you have anything like that, some analogs?
I can comment on this a little bit more. So because the leading terms in the 1 over n expansion for tensors are not planar graphs, they are so-called melons, well, in our jargon, but let's say they have a tree structure, then the corresponding phase is branch polymer. So typically, when branch polymers were found in many other approaches, very easily, you know, when you glue tetrahedra in a random way in higher dimensions, it's one of the first things that jumps to your computer, okay? So dynamical triangulations know about these phases. What is new with our approach is we are not discouraged to meet them. Why are we not discouraged? Because first we see that the tensor expansion has much more to come because it is indexed by an integer called the degree, which is not a topological invariant first, and which encodes a richer property than just a genus for matrices. So far from being simpler, it has more structure and it is more layered. And therefore, beyond the first terms that jump to your eyes, you know analytically that there will be subleading contributions that have a certain interesting organization. And by the way, I would like to say, and that's why I insisted on these Scheffer labels, that there is a kind of subject we could perhaps bring to the attention and exchange with the dynamical triangulation people, which is that by using colored dynamical triangulations, you can have better enumerative combinatorics techniques. And that is, for instance, something which is substantiated in a recent paper on the archive by Razvan Gourou and Gilles Scheffer, where they prove that, indeed, the double scaling limit of these tensor models is we have, for instance, discovered that it doesn't behave the same way in dimensions smaller than 6 and higher than 6. This was, I think, completely unexpected. So we are making progress, and that's why we are confident. So in our picture, we would find a kind of protospace which is indeed branch polymers, but the further fluctuations of the tensor model may round up and create shortcuts, which would progressively lead us to a rounder and more physical space-time. Of course, this has to be substantiated.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment and a question. Yeah. The comment I'll make use again, as everybody else has, of your analogy. I would invite the toddler to come back home to the loop quantum gravity home and grow up here.
Okay.
And
let me explain
why. Because I think my understanding of the Wilsonian renormalization group is that got us out of sweeping the infinities under the rug, and it said that renormalization happens even in cases where there are ultraviolet cutoffs, like condensed matter physics, and it built strongly the analogy between quantum field theory with fixed cutoffs, say lattice gauge theory, and condensed matter physics, and I think that continues in quantum gravity. And the meaning of loop quantum gravity variables, so to speak, is not whether you decorate things with holonomies or not, but two things. One of them is the discovery of the discreteness of the quantum geometry, which still requires, and I agree with you, it still requires a Wilsonian point of view to describe the infrared limit and to describe the classical low energy limit. So I endorse the bringing in of techniques to get to the Wilsonian point of view. And second, the closeness to topological field theory, which is also built in to the tensor model point of view. And finally, let me mention the geometrogenesis is an idea that came from an analysis of issues in loop quantum gravity, particularly disordered locality from Fotini, Marco Polo, and Thomas Konopkin, who were my collaborators on that paper. And the scenario that you have in mind is perfectly well realizable within the loop quantum gravity world. So the issue, it seems to me, the issues which separate your vision from the loop quantum gravity vision are really the minor, from your point of view, the minor issue, and from our point of view, the major issue of whether you just need a large number of scaling, a large amount of scaling, or whether you actually have to imagine infinite scaling. And Wilson tells us there's no technical difference between them.
Okay, so on the toddler analogy and going home, yes, we will always pay tribute to what we owe to this, and it is great that different approaches to quantum gravity can become source of inspirations in both sides. No, the destiny usually of a toddler is to become a teenager and to have conflict with his parents and then to grow up. So I think, frankly, I think that is what will be probably our destiny. We are going to have a lot of interactions with people from the random matrices because they have a much older picture of the things and they are more advanced. And in this way also, we can connect as well to some aspect of string theory. For instance, in string theory, brains are not quantized as primary objects. And I think, personally, this is because two-dimensional mathematical physics is well developed, and three dimensions is more difficult than four dimensions to understand. But we would like also if we could have a dialogue with a string theory by saying, OK, you are thinking to these brains as sort of effects coming from strings. But could we quantize them directly by using the tensor theory and so on? So I think it is by enriching the communication lines in many directions that we are going to progress and be best useful even to LQT. So I appreciate that you tell me that your home is very much open for the toddler, but I think we will go up. Yes.
It's a comment and a question. So
yes.
Vincent, you know I'm a big fan of tensor model and GFT model, and I think that the result of Razvan, which opened the field, is a very important result. And also, I'm proud to have been in the prehistory of that by collaborating with Razvan. But I'm honestly a bit puzzled by your rewriting of the history of the field, and I don't completely understand.
You're
so let me try.
Very important person here.
Yes. No, it's not about. But it's. I'll try to put that, especially in front of this. I want to put that back into context. I mean. This idea that GFT and tensor models, you know, are going to be important in quantum gravity really stems from work in quantum gravity. Let's say Bulatov-Ogori worked with it before, and the field got stuck for a long while. And I like to point out to this, let's say, prehistory paper of that we wrote with Razvan, which was, we say, okay, well, it's complicated, and Razvan has this great idea that say, let's simplify the problem, and let's look at tensors, just because, you know, this is what we can do first. And as a simplification, we like to know what happens when N enter the games, and we put so. And it's always important at some point to introduce some technical simplification idea, and that got onto an important track. So clearly, this doesn't appear in your presentation. But also, I know that when you're a toddler and you want to exist somehow, there's always the temptation to forget where you're coming from, but. And there's also always a temptation to maybe take a technical hypothesis as a fundamental hypothesis, which is what you're doing there. And there's no need for that. I think the validity and the beauty of the result and the range of where they are, they speak for themselves. There's no need to, rewrite history. It might be, and I understand that there is, once you're there, these models are interesting by themselves, and they might be have many different applications which are not quantum gravity. But the question would be, one way I interpret this this beautiful result that you were saying that if you just have this tensor discretization, somehow the large and the randomization flows towards small n, and then you get this polymer phase, which are these Kronpol triangulations. For me, means that, well, we need to go beyond that. That is, we mean that if we just have this tensor cutoff, we need to put some other degrees of freedom. They're going to expand this Kronpol triangulation somewhere else, and that goes, you know, that's going to, I can predict that's going to be some kind of reintroduction of a scale, another scale on the lattice.
Thank you. Let me try to answer a bit by reverse order. Decorations. Yes, decorations on tensor, we are very much open to your favorite decorations. We can be open to LQG data, we can look at spinners, we can look at, but we have first, we can look at supersymmetry, we can look at many versions around tensor models, just like around matrix model. But first, we have to know the basics. We have to know the basics of what is the tensor track one run expansion telling us, because it is a new tool. And also, I would like on the general problematic of, how do you connect to your past and your, okay, I would like to say that if we are at this crossroads, it should be looked also as an opportunity. For instance, group field theory to put them in contact with random matrices. Dynamical triangulations to introduce them to enumerative combinatorics that have been sort of supplanting now random matrix models in the most recent studies, you know, of two-dimensional triangulations. Where, for instance, bringing in the ideas of Schaeffer or people from the probabilistic school is going to perhaps enrich these subjects. And therefore, we see us as a crossroads which is beneficial to everybody. And we have to understand our main powering tool. And this main powering tool, in fact, is this. So it's true, it's technical. No, sorry, this one. Yes, it's technical. But until we have understood what it wants to tell us, I think we have to do that before any decoration.